It is just a little after 6 p.m. on March 10th, 2021. Tonight we're having a work session in regards to Alaska Natives Without Land legislation, and we will be accepting five-minute testimony per person. Also, testimony can be submitted to the Petersburg Borough Assembly by email, and this is not necessarily the only day that you can send in emails, so if you have thoughts on this legislation, so just keep sending them to the Assembly, and at some point we will look over all of the input. So the way we'll do this tonight is the clerk will recognize the next caller in line and have the operator unmute your line, and you will have 5 minutes. So with that being said, Clerk Thompson, do we have any callers?
Yes. Charmaine, if you could please unmute Eric Lee.
Okay.
His line is now open.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, Eric, Mr. Lee, we can. And at about 4 minutes and 30 seconds, the clerk will I believe ring a bell, and then at 5 minutes you'll ring a bell twice, and it'd be that means you should wrap up your testimony. So thank you, yeah. Mr. Lee, to start.
Yeah, that sounds good. Okay, my name is Eric Lee, and I want to preface the comments that I have regarding this bill by saying that I don't support the bill, but I'm here as a participant in an ongoing discussion that I hope will lead to a better solution that would create real and lasting equity and protect the health of the forest that we all depend on. So that's where I'm coming from. And Senator Murkowski has stated that this bill, quote, is about equity. Yet this bill is quite the opposite. It creates conditions that are anything but equitable. The most obvious and easy to understand is the creation of a native corporation in Tennessee, where six without land shareholders would receive 23,040 acres for their new corporation, the same amount of acreage as each of the other four without land communities, some with hundreds of shareholders. Given the history of disputes over equity that plagued native corporations after ANCSA was passed, it should be assumed that this clear inequity would be the source of more conflict among village corporation shareholders. Another inequity is the lack of acknowledgement of the compensation received in the past by without land shareholders in lieu of their ineligibility for land. For example, last year, 2020, this additional compensation, as prescribed under ANCSA, Section 7I and 7J, produced dividend checks to natives without land that were four times greater than was received by shareholders in village corporations that did receive land. Surely there can be no equitable settlement without accounting for the compensation the without land shareholders received for many years in lieu of land. To understand the potential for conflict that could be created by this inequity, we should remember the many years of legal battles between Native corporations up north in Alaska over collection and distribution of revenues that were to be collected and dispersed to shareholders under the revenue sharing agreement and Section 7I and J of ANCSA. The lawsuits and counter-lawsuits went on for 20 years and depleted some Native corporations to the point of bankruptcy. Needless to say, these conflicts also caused lasting damage to the relationship between the Native corporations. So it is clear by looking at these hard lessons from the past that inequitable compensation is a volatile and divisive issue that requires very careful and thoughtful consideration. In this case, it means an accounting must be made of compensation that has already been granted to the natives without land, in lieu of not receiving land under ANCSA. It is important to note also that the additional compensation paid to without land shareholders came from revenues generated by the extraction of oil and timber resources on village corporation lands, which have now been largely depleted. If five communities were suddenly to get land, other Native corporations could demand payback of some or all of the money the Natives without land have already received in lieu of land. So as with the case of Kaneki, it is clear that this bill would create far more inequity than it proposes to resolve. It seems like after multiple attempts at passing this bill, it has failed to get very far, and I think it's time to look in new directions to resolve this, the inequities they've created under ANCSA. So that's basically, I think we should look for solutions using modern tools that are at our disposal now, and learn from the hard lessons of the past to help us arrive at an equitable solution. I think the solutions out there, we just need to apply things we've learned and our imagination, so we could probably come up with something that would be far better. And I don't see any reason to have to cling to this particular bill because it is the only bill out there. I think we could probably come up with something better quite easily if we work together and shared ideas. I like the idea of all the new ideas that really are out there for solutions. So I would love to see us continue the discussion in the direction that explores those ideas. So that's all I have, and I want to thank everybody for creating this format for discussion. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for your testimony this evening, Mr. Lee.
Thank you. excuse me. Charmaine, can we please unmute Nicole Hollingstad?
Her line is now open. Hi, I'm Nicole Hollingstad, born and raised in Petersburg. I currently sit on the board of directors for Sea Alaska Corporation, and I'm calling to ask Assembly's support of a bill for Alaska Natives without land. Such a bill would transfer about 115,000 acres of land to Native hands. Near Petersburg, it would be a township, or 23,040 acres. The Tlingit Haida and Tsimshian used to roam all 23 million acres of southeast Alaska, including the 17 million acres of what became the Tongass National Forest in 1908, without tribal consultation. A bill transferring land to these five landless communities would return 0.5% of those indigenous homelands. This is important to remember, and I'll say it again. 0.5%, it's half of 1% of the Tongass. And let me underscore public access to these lands, because this question comes up repeatedly. Public access will continue, and access is legally protected on multiple levels. Section 17B of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971 already protects prior and existing rights through the land and on trails and roads. This protection pre-exists any new legislation. It's already in place. But in addition, three pages of language in a new proposed bill reinforces the access protections under ANCSA. It guarantees public access for non-commercial recreation, hunting, subsistence, and gathering. A bill would also allow creation of an ANCSA urban corporation in Petersburg. This would be a corporation that is registered and ruled by the state of Alaska corporate regulations. The corporation's owners would be the shareholders of Sea Alaska who enrolled in 1971 through the community of Petersburg, and there were originally 428 Petersburg shareholders. So this new corporation would be an independent, autonomous for-profit company governed by a board of directors who are shareholders and elected by the corporation's shareholders. And it is this board that would set the vision and hire management to execute towards their vision. And we know other Native corporations have diverse uses of their land. Other urban and village corporations have successful tourism destinations. They own and occupy real estate, and all are taxpayers in their southeast communities. And please remember, these are Native institutions led by Native people. We both utilize and revere the land. Protecting the land, habitat, subsistence, and water quality are values and tenets that we live by. And the most direct and likely the quickest benefit to Petersburg is the creation of a new company in town. This means new jobs with an employment base as diverse as the community. And we know there's an economic multiplier effect of local corporate spend on services like accounting firms, legal counsel, insurance companies, building and equipment maintenance, and construction. And Native corporations spend on goods in their communities like fuel, utilities, supplies, catering, restaurants, and hotels. Longer-term benefits include the tax base that would exist for Petersburg. And most significantly, new industries that can be as diverse as aquaculture, low-impact tourism, carbon capture, contracting, joint venture partnerships, and more. For 50 years, Petersburg has been, without the additional benefits, an urban corporation would have added to the community. And I would like to let Mr. Eric Lee know that urban corporations under ANCSA, those shareholders receive 7i regardless of whether there's a local urban corporation. So it's not a double dip. That benefit existed all along. But what's been missing is the local urban corporation distributions and benefits in Petersburg. So when we talk about progress for Petersburg, there is no I versus you. There is no us versus them. It is we. We want a community with a strong economic base, jobs, education, and opportunities. We want a thriving town where people can live and work and visit and enjoy. But that takes planning. We want to work together on viable plans for Petersburg. Alaska Natives without land will never give up this fight. We are not going anywhere. We are backed by Sea Alaska. We have the support of Alaska's congressional delegation. We have the collective strength and hope of our ancestors behind us and the future of our children and their children ahead of us. This legislation will eventually pass, and the record will be captured for history. So where will the Petersburg Assembly stand on this issue? My hope is that Petersburg will stand for development, for opportunity, and for justice. Thank you all so much. Goodness cheese for your time.
Thank you for your testimony this evening.
Charmaine, if you could please unmute Todd Antioquia.
The line is now open.
Great. Thank you so much, Charmaine, and to Mr. Mayor and the Assembly members, Ganesh Cheesh, thank you so much for your leadership and for hosting these important sessions. We really appreciated the time before you and in previous Assembly meetings and work sessions, and your continuation is really in the spirit of what the Southeast Alaska Landless Corporation and the Alaska Natives Without Land campaign has been working on for years and even generations to build greater awareness about the history, about righting this inequity, and about the vision for the future. So thank you again for hosting this important session. What part of what I wanted to be able to offer is to those Petersburg citizens, folks that are members of interest groups within the community that want to learn more about the Alaska Natives Without Land and about the five landless communities and about the impacts to Petersburg, the profound benefits to other communities that have enjoyed village and urban corporations in their communities. We would really appreciate joining you in within your various groups to come to the table, to hear your questions, to open a dialogue, and to build relationships moving forward. And so I would encourage anyone who's interested to reach out to us via our website. It's at withoutland.org, or to come to our Facebook page and let us know what your availability is, and we would just really enjoy the pleasure of engaging you. I wanted to speak also to Nicole mentioned to Mr. Lee about his comments related to what he perceived as a inequity or imbalance with the resource revenue sharing. Just to add to Nicole's comments, it's it is a common misperception that Mr. Lee was talking about, that that urban shareholders have received more than others. Resource revenue sharing is distributed on a per shareholder basis to both village and urban corporations. The difference is that the urban shareholders receive those benefits directly. Many of the villages that receive those per share benefits pass through the benefits directly to village shareholders. Others utilize them for business development and other uses to benefit them in the long term. So there is the inequity is these five communities not having corporations to be able to add to that those benefits to both their shareholders and the communities through innovative economy development, jobs, dividends, cultural programs, and so forth. So I just wanted to put an exclamation point on that, and we're happy to work directly with Mr. Lee or anyone else who continues to wonder about how that resource revenue sharing works. He also mentioned Tenneke Springs. I think he mentioned six shareholders. Tenneke Springs has 132 enrolled landless shareholders, and there are many other villages throughout Alaska of the 200 villages that have enjoyed having their own corporations in these last 50 years that have fewer shareholders than Tenneke. So just wanted to be able to correct that as well. But thank you again for your leadership and for continuing this work amongst the community, and we really look forward to being at the table with all of you in the future. Ganoch-chish.
Okay, thank you for your testimony this evening. I'd like to ask the callers, when they give their testimony, just to give their opinion on the legislation, maps, et cetera. And I would appreciate it if you didn't question other people's testimony in accuracy. Maybe that's something you could do to reach out to those people individually and do that. But that's not what this is about tonight. This is just to get public input. Clerk Thompson, will you have the operator unmute the next caller?
Yes, thank you. Charmaine, if you could please unmute Becky Knight.
The line is now open.
Hi, this is Becky Knight. Hi, Mayor and Assembly members. Senate Bill 4891 is highly flawed and intended to corporatize 115,000 acres of precious Tongass public lands for private profit. Senator Murkowski and Dan Sullivan should sponsor official congressional field hearings throughout Southeast Alaska for this bill. It requires a full public vetting. These hearings should be conducted post-pandemic, not as Alaskans strive to recover financially and otherwise. As I previously expressed to you during previous meetings, I greatly respect the deep cultural ties of Alaska Native people to the lands of Southeast Alaska. For much of my adult life, I've worked to protect those lands from industrialization, thereby trying to make certain that those ties endure. However, the bill's legislative history demonstrates that these land transfers are not justified. Multiple documentation and my earlier communications to you support that rationale. In short, the premise for this bill is flawed because the five communities intended to benefit from the legislation were found ineligible for village status under the 1971 Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. They failed to meet three eligibility criteria, specifically, number one, 25 or more natives were village residents on the 1970 census. Number two, the village was not modern or urban in character. And number three, the majority of the residents were native. That natives from these communities have been, quote, waiting 50 years is not due to an oversight or an inadvertent omission. Their exclusion from village status was an informed, considered, and an intentional determination under ANCSA. Quite simply, they didn't qualify, as various agency officials have repeatedly written and testified before Congress regarding the very similar versions of this bill, including in 1996 and 2015. The proposed bill will create new inequities where none exist. It will open a Pandora's box. In the words of Jim Lyons, Undersecretary for the Department of Agriculture in 1996, there are no landless natives in Southeast Alaska, since all natives have a beneficial interest in lands owned by Sea Alaska, including surface and subsurface estates. But if these individuals truly believe that they have been treated unfairly, then the perfect solution, and I mean perfect, would be for them to seek land from Sea Alaska, the regional corporation for Southeast Alaska. No additional lands would be removed from public ownership, and any disputes could be settled amongst themselves. In a press release the day after the Sea Alaska legislation passed, Murkowski declared, quote, some 43 years after passage of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, the federal government will finally finish paying the debt we owe natives for the settlement of their Aboriginal land claims. Yet very shortly after that press release, she introduced a similar version of this bill, and now this latest version. Murkowski has confused the definition of final. Finally, while Senator Murkowski was in Petersburg during deliberations for the 2014 70,000-acre Sea Alaska bill, a member of the public remarked to her that, quote, much of Southeast Alaska residents cannot help but feel being played as hostages and political pawns in this legislation. Senator Murkowski replied that she, quote, truly regretted the anxiety and tension that the Sea Alaska bill had recreated in our small towns, and she recognized that the legislation had, quote, pitted neighbor against neighbor, and that the resentment is not good for communities. Clearly, that regret was short-lived and insincere. And I did have a few questions that I wanted to ask, and I'll ask a couple here, and you can cut me off at 5 minutes. I'd like a detailed list of the monetary value of all the infrastructure and their locations, which will be conveyed to each corporation, and the value of that infrastructure, and including a grand total. This includes roads, bridges, cabins, marine access facilities, and the investments made in implementation of silvicultural prescriptions and timber stands, for instance, for thinning. And although current supporters of the legislation allege that current public access to these lands is guaranteed under the proposed legislation, the bill's language provides a caveat, quote, subject to any reasonable restrictions that may be imposed by the urban corporations on the public use. Please explain how that terminology is not subject to interpretation by current and future beneficiaries of this legislation. In this case, verbal assurances are not consistent with the language, which clearly could be interpreted to prohibit access. And my husband had a very similar incident, similar to one that the mayor relayed a few years back when at Hobart Bay, and I know that's Gold Belt lands, but the caretaker came out and told him, nope, they can't walk on that. And if you claim that access was inherent in ANCSA, then this seems to be in conflict with what happened there. Also, the Tongass 1997 strategy included a series of mapped small, medium, and large growth reserves intended for sustaining habitat to help ensure the maintenance of well-distributed, viable populations of all old-growth-associated wildlife species across the Tongass. I would like to see a map provided of the proposed selections with an overlay that depicts the location of these reserves in relation to the selections. Will the new corporation respect these reserves? If not, then the conservation strategy will be moot. And I request that Senate Bill 4891 or any form of it not be advanced in any form. Indigenous land claims in Alaska were settled long ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Knight, for your testimony this evening. Clerk Thompson?
Yes, thank you. Charmaine, if you could please unmute Cecilia Tavolario.
The line is now open.
Thank you. My name is Cecilia Lopez Tavolero. I am from Petersburg and do own property in Petersburg and Paytas. I am in favor of the proposed legislation for creating 5 new urban corporations in Southeast Alaska. Land nominations. Well, since we last presented to the Assembly, we have worked diligently to remove selections that include sites with recreation infrastructure. For instance, we have selected land adjacent to the 2 cabins in Portage Bay, even though it is explained in detail in the proposed bill that public access, whether it's for hunting, recreation, or subsistence use, will continue. But being the good neighbors that we want to be and have always been, we have chosen adjacent lands. Now, Southeast Alaska chose to ensure that the cabins were accessible and that the voice of the community was heard and listened to as land was chosen. Now, the history of the land claims. Well, prior to the land claims, each Native person could go out and claim 160 acres. Times that by how many people? That's way more land that would come out of Southeast Alaska back to the historic peoples of the land. So I would say a lot of the conservation groups might want to calculate how much better it is having the corporations in Southeast Alaska only being able to choose 23,040 acres. Well, Petersburg, Wrangell, Ketchikan, Haynes, and Tanaki, we did get left out. And there was one criteria that was being used at the time that people were getting enrolled. It took a while for them to go to each of the communities. That was the BIA enrollment officers. And you were told in one community that you had to sign up where you were living, in other communities, wherever you historic or traditional relatives, your grandparents came from. So with regard to the bills that have been introduced, there have been five other Congresses where the landless bills were introduced. The corporations may not be the best settlement, but we're not asking for any more or any less than all the other communities, and we cannot undo that. We can't. This is what Congress decided on. So what does anyone think of the viability of the option of the law of the land that was prior to ANCSA? That was go out and choose your land, 160 acres, and do whatever with it. What have halted the efforts of our bill being introduced into Congress? Well, there's been the pandemic relay prior to COVID. You know, things were moving right along. We were introducing ourselves to the communities and getting a dialogue going and sharing information. We had problems informing the community, as many people had no idea this was an issue. Discovering why the communities were left out was an important first step that took a lot of time and effort, not to mention money. Number three, the extent of the land being granted to corporations has often been exaggerated in an effort to scare people away from support. My goodness, even with the last Alaska transfer their rest of their land, a lot of land was more land was allocated for wilderness, and there's millions and millions and millions of acres in Southeast that have been set aside for wilderness. So I don't know why this 115,000 acres is such a big deal. Number four, organizing a cohesive voice amongst all of these hard-to-reach communities proved difficult. Number five, many people fear that this land will be purely industrialized. For example, clear-cutting fears, which is quite frankly ridiculous. Who does that now? Number six, conservationist groups. Non-Native residents misunderstanding the difference between village and urban corporations. It was majority Native, refers to the village corporation, and that used to be the criteria. But then last minute, before the bill was actually passed, there were many changes to the bill, including urban corporations being formed, which is the Native community. The population was not the majority in the community. For example, in Southeast, Juneau and Sitka. Up north, it was Kenai and Kodiak. And this bill passing would bring back our youth. Other communities benefit from Native corporations by providing meaningful career and leadership opportunities for youth, slowing the out-migration. So I would like to just say we as the historic people of Southeast Alaska should have some kind of a say in our own backyard, our own homelands. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony this evening. Clerk Thompson.
Yes, Charmaine, if you will please unmute Will Ware.
The line is now open.
Yeah, good evening. I'm speaking tonight in favor of this landless legislation. I won't take too long tonight, as it's my belief that each member of this assembly has already made their decision regarding this bill. This landless coalition has been engaged in this fight for 50 years. We presented maps, had discussions, made public what our intentions are. There's nothing that has been done rushed or planned behind closed doors. The information you will have presented to you tonight will demonstrate that we've heard your concerns, especially in regards to Forest Service cabins being in our land selections, and remove those as such. Allow me to again specifically lay out answers to two of the false narratives we continue to hear. Number one, this is not a logging bill. This community of eligible Tlingits have no interest in logging, nor is there a market to do so. Some have asked, why not put it in this bill? Because it would make this a logging bill and indeed open up Pandora's box even more so than it already is. Number two, public access is the law of the land for this specific legislation. No one will be denied access to these lands. Reasonable restrictions are just that, for reasonable reasons, i.e. construction, emergencies, or dangers to life. I have to say that I believe those who keep saying there are questions that need answering are being somewhat disingenuous. We have answered your questions. We have modified our selections. We have done everything within reason to accommodate each and every concern. To have my colleagues here to continue to answer the same questions over and over is feeling as though you are either not liking or hearing our answers, or you believe we're being dishonest. What is interesting to me is that when land development occurs in Petersburg, no one but the same two or three environmentalists scream, and as I've said before, strumming on their one guitar string. When the state gives land a mental health trust, the community either applauds the decision or at the very least has no oppositional opinion to it. When loggers clear land, you hear appreciation to the contribution to the community via groceries, fuel, and supplies that they buy. When our Tlingit community is receiving what is due them from the federal government, regardless of the billions of dollars tribal entities bring into the state of Alaska each year, there is now cause for concern and question. Yes, it's apparent to me that many of you have made your choice already. However, please allow me to try and change your mind. I was born and raised here. I've invested into this community via buying a home, even though my full-time job is in Juneau. I'm raising my family here and started a couple of businesses because I believe in Petersburg's future. I believe that our leaders want a strong and diverse economy. Now, I've been told from some on this assembly to look at what your people have done previously. Yes, let's look at that for a moment. Look at what our Native Health has done for our communities as a whole. Look at the millions of dollars our corporations contribute annually to scholarships. Look at the infrastructures our local IRA tribes bring to their communities. Look at the thousands of jobs with livable wages our tribal entities, specifically our corporations, bring into Southeast Alaska alone. I implore you to focus on what we truly are trying to accomplish here and to stop worrying about the what-ifs and trust that we, members of this community, folks that I've mentioned before, we go to church with you. Our kids go to school together. We serve on various boards together. We also want what's best for Petersburg. We want a healthy economy where our children can come home to. Again, I ask it to you and I implore you to please take a look at what the true benefits would bring to Petersburg and the addition of adverse economy and what that means for us right here, right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony this evening. Clerk Thompson?
Mayor Jensen, I have no other callers that say they would like to speak at this time.
Okay, well, like I said at the start of the work session, people that would still like to send in their thoughts on this issue, this topic, they can still do it by email. Thank you, everybody, that called in and gave their input this evening. So I guess the work session is now over. Thanks again for calling in.